Hello everyone and welcome to the Knee Down Podcast. My name is Matt Grant and today I'm joined with an esteemed guest. Today we are joined with Abby Jackson, of course, the creator on TikTok, Instagram and pretty much everywhere else as well, I should imagine. Abby, say hello.
Hello, thank you very much for having me today. Yeah, cheers.
It's an absolute pleasure. Now, I have wrote quite a bit down to speak about today because you have a lot of bike knowledge and I think we should tap into that today for the Knee Down Podcast. And also to ask about your experience at Silverstone, because you just came back a few days ago. Silverstone fun?
Yeah, so I got back on Monday. I think it was like my fourth or fifth year in a row of going. It was actually a bit of a different vibe this time around, but it's always amazing going to Silverstone. But the way Silverstone's laid out now, obviously they're building a new go-kart track right in the middle. So everything that was in the main fan zone area has now been shifted to a completely different part of the track. So I definitely got my steps in over the weekend. I've never done so much walking on a MotoGP weekend. No, it was, as always, it was such a good weekend. Really good to see all, loads of friends as well. And yeah, it was a bit of a party one as well. So it was good fun. I enjoyed it.
How many steps did you do, out of curiosity?
I think I peaked on one of the days. I think it was the Friday I hit like 28,000.
God. Silverstone's not small as well. So walking around that takes a long time.
Exactly.
I was one of the unlucky ones, I guess you could say. I was there at Silverstone 2018 when they cancelled the race. And I walked around the whole breadth of that, just spending like I had millions of pounds just on merchandise, because there was nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Walked away home with like 5 bags of shopping and merchandise. And the entire thing obviously got cancelled, so I was a bit disappointed. So, yeah. And Tito Rabat got badly injured too, so it was a proper double whammy of negativity that day.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was my last experience at Silverstone. Hopefully next time I go, it's going to be better. So,
yeah. Well, they've moved it back to August for next year, so hopefully...
They have, so it should be nice and sunny again.
Yeah, well, I saw something that was, I think there was something like 22,000 fewer people than there were last year because they've moved it to May, which was just insane, yeah.
And it is rather expensive too, isn't it? But I guess we'll get to that later. Yeah. So before we get to that and before we really delve into the MotoGP side, let's talk about Abby Jackson. How did you first get into MotoGP? What was it about it that brought you to it and really made it the sport that you want to get involved with?
Well, I think the easiest way to say it is I've been around bikes since I was born. Like, my dad had me in his helmet before I was in a pushchair. That's the way I always like to say it. My dad was a journalist for the Sun newspaper, which is a big outlet here in the UK. And my parents met through motorbikes as well. So I've literally been born and raised around bikes. So my dad was a motorsport journalist. He covered mainly the bike column, as well as like regular sport as well. But he used to cover the World Supers, the British Supers, and occasionally the MotoGP when it was used to be at Donington back in the day. So essentially, it's just something that's always been there. It's always been around. Like, if I have like memories as a kid, just sat on the floor playing with toys and having bikes in the background, whether it be the TT or, like I say, British Supers. There's just always been bikes around. And with my dad's job, manufacturers would give him a bike for the week. He'd test it, he'd write a review on it, and he'd give the bike back. So every week there was a new bike in the garage and on the driveway. So yeah, literally just been around bikes my entire life. But I think when it comes to MotoGP, it's like the best of the best. It's the best riders racing on the best bikes. Obviously, they're not bikes that you can go out and buy, so you know that it's the top of the top with these machines that they're making. I mean, every year the bikes are coming out looking more and more like spaceships. So we're straying a bit further away from a motorbike looking bike, more into sort of how far can we push this machine. A lot of people bash it, but I love it. I think the MotoGP bikes look insane. Like, I've been up close to a few. And I think it just is seeing how far we can actually push this thing on two wheels to go. I think one of the things that I find really silly about it, but I really enjoy, is that if you were to just leave that bike on its own, it would just fall over and fall apart. Like, somebody has to maneuver that machine to make it go, you know, 200 miles an hour. So at something so fragile can be pushed to the absolute limits by a person. And that's what I think I love, is like seeing these guys who can just jump on it and take this machine round a track at X miles an hour and just go for it, basically.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. I always have a distinct quote from one of my good friends. He's actually one of my moderators and designers, Sergio23. I was of the the same vein originally that I thought the bikes look silly. They've lost that identity. They don't look as good as they used to. But it's prototype racing. This is, as you say, this is the pinnacle of bike racing. It's not meant to be Superbike 2.0.
Yeah.
It's MotoGP at the very top level.
Yeah.
And when you think of it that way, we now have so much innovation, so much design, so much electronics. Everything is just beyond what Superbike and British Superbike and everything else is. That's why it's that it has that prestige.
Exactly, yeah.
But I completely agree. I'm actually now on the point where I really like the way they look. They look fierce, they look menacing, and we're going to get down votes here from you and I because we like it and the majority says no. But 2026, 2027, you know, things will change, but I don't think they'll change dramatically. I think the aero will just be reduced, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, I did a bit of a study about it a video about it last year. The changes that they're making to the aero, it's not drastic either. It's like 5 mil per side off the back aero, and then they're pushing the front back like 5 mil as well. So in terms of like looking at the actual like shadow of the bike, they're not changing loads. They like you wouldn't be able to tell just if you to put like, you know, the same livery side by side. But it'll definitely come across in the performance in the next few years, I do think.
Yeah. I think the fans' expectations for the aesthetics of the bikes is a little bit ambitious. But and to be honest with you, as long as the racing's good, I don't really mind what they look like. They could look absolutely hideous. I mean, the baggers are coming to MotoGP and they don't look nice, but they did provide some good racing, so that's all that really matters to me.
Exactly. Like, and I remember, I think it was Silverstone 2021, I want to say, can't really remember, when Gresini like brought out the rear wing for the first time, or like having the sort of the rear aero for the first time. And it was like the red against the blue, so it looked like a dragon or something. And I just remember sitting at Village thinking, that looks absolutely ridiculous. But then they went like fastest in like three of the sectors. So I was like, maybe I shouldn't bash it. Like, it works. Yeah. It looks ridiculous and it works. But the one aero that I can't stand, and I will stand on this, I think the KTM like full-blown DRS wing just looks ridiculous.
You don't like that?
No, I don't like that one at all. But I think the other ones look cool.
There was an Aprilia one which was absolutely hideous. I feel like it was an antenna thing, but I do believe it was done for the purpose of testing it, not necessarily to racing it. But that thing looked bloody horrific. And I did think at one point, oh my God, they're going to start putting this on the thing. We're going to have luggage racks at some point. That's how bad it's going to get. So I know the answer to this question anyway, but for the viewers who don't, you do happen to ride yourself. Tell us what bike you ride and how your riding experience has been changed over the years and how much you enjoy it.
Yeah, so I've got myself a little MT125, little Yamaha. I got my CBT license in October last year, and I didn't admit it for a long time, but I actually failed my first one in August last year. Obviously, you can't fail a CBT in the UK, but they can not award it to you. And I didn't get it the first time. I was absolutely gutted about it, obviously, because, you know, bikes, I live and breathe bikes. I wanted to be good at it. And then I went back in October and redid it. And I passed that time. And then we came into winter and I got the bike, and the bike went in the garage for about 4 months and I didn't ride it at all. And then the first time I took the bike back out, I dropped it and I was so mortified and embarrassed about it. And I put the bike back in the garage and I was, like, I say it now, I was so close to selling the bike. I was so close to just like hanging it up already and being like, no, I hate this. I'm never going to be able to ride.
Was it the damage that you did to the bike that upset you the most, or the fact that you dropped it and it was like, I failed, like a personal thing?
Yeah, right. Like, the bike wasn't damaged at all. All I did was bend my brake lever around and there's a little scratch on the exhaust. I think it was more the fact that I dropped it and my mum had to ride it home. And I think it was that sort of, this is so embarrassing. I'm walking home while my mum's riding the bike. And I was so mortified about it. So I put the bike back in the garage, didn't get on for ages. But then I found a lady local to me who's a riding instructor, and she is just the most incredible biker woman I've ever met. And she just changed the game completely for me. Like, she's given me this newfound sense of confidence and competence. So I'm so much more confident on the road now, and I can actually ride. Like, she's not just teaching you to pass a test, she's teaching you to ride. And she's absolutely amazing. And she's scary, she's strict. Like, if you do something wrong, she'll tell you about it, or she'll say, why did you do that? Like, she'll actively make you think about why you did that certain manoeuvre in that way. And she's just genuinely, I owe my riding career to her, I'm going to say. So in terms of, like, actually actively riding, I've only been riding probably since February, March. But I love it so much. Like, even when I'm in my car now, all I want to do is just be like, oh, I'd rather be on the bike now. I'd rather be riding, like, sun's out and I'm sat in the car. I'd rather be in my leathers on the bike. But yeah, and I've obviously got my mum's old bike in the garage, which I've been doing up, and that's a CBR 600RR 2005. Nice. Nearly a classic now as well.
Wow.
My mum wants to get that. All that bike needs is just new tyres, and then she'll be ready to come out on the road with me as well, because my mum's been riding 30-odd years. So we're just sort of waiting to get the tyres sorted, and then it'll be my mum and I riding together. So yeah, me on my little 125, my mum on the big 600.
That's fantastic.
So it's a perfect little duo, yeah, it's good.
So you're technical as well then? You'd work on the bike, you're happy to do things like that, no shying away from anything that is, I don't know, it's going to be a little bit more, I mean, I wouldn't know much, I don't know much too much on the bike side, technical side, so I'd need someone with expertise. I wouldn't be able to do anything like myself.
I'd say I have, like, sort of the base level standard maintenance down, and I like to call it a YouTube, certified YouTube mechanic. So a lot of the stuff I've done has been from YouTube or from, you know, friends and family around me. But I do now actually work in a bike shop, so in a bike, motorcycle parts and spares. So all I do all day at work is answer people's questions and, you know, about parts and spares and things like that. So I sort of have to know what I'm doing in a way, because that's my job in like, away from all the social media. My real job is knowing how a bike works. And when I first started, I remember in my job interview, they put like schematics on the table in front of me, and they just said, oh, can you name any of this? And I was like, no.
Let me just get YouTube up.
Yeah, let me just quickly double check that. But no, I think working in the bike shop, I've picked up things so quickly. Like, I've genuinely upped my knowledge so much just from, you know, hearing conversations in the office around me and things like that. So I think I've definitely, like, upped my knowledge recently. But yeah, just me and my little 125. Love it. It's good fun.
Perfect start. And it can lead so much more in the future, can't it? So we'll see you in BSB in a couple of years' time, yeah?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So I want to quickly just loop back over now with that experience as a fan, as someone who rides and experiences the life. Did you ride to Silverstone? Did you go in the bikes with people, or did you go in like a little convoy together, or did you just go on your own wolf with family in the car?
I went with my mum in the car.
Okay.
We camped there the whole weekend. We camp every year, so it's been my mum and I who go to all the MotoGP rounds. I say all the MotoGP rounds I've done has been with my mum. And we just camp every year. We're sort of season campers. We've been through the blistering heat and the pouring rain and thunderstorms, so we're sort of just used to it now. Like, no matter what the weather is, we'll take it as Silverstone, because Silverstone has its own microclimate. Like, it'll be, you know, you go to the next corner on the track and it's raining. So
yeah,
just,
true.
You just got to deal with it. Honestly, it's the easiest thing to say at Silverstone. You just got to prepare for anything.
And you had the Woodlands experience, right, with the nice big stage, the arena. That's not an arena as such, but it's like a tent with the music, isn't it?
Woodlands, oh, now we're asking questions. So that one, dead honest, I snuck in. Wasn't supposed to be at that campsite. Snuck in.
Confession.
Somebody said, oh, they're doing a silent disco there. And I was like, oh, silent disco? I am there. So snuck in with some friends there. I think that's probably why my steps were so high on that day, was because I was just dancing and jumping around all night.
What were you listening to?
Oh, I don't know. I can't remember. If I'm honest, I can't remember. But there was...
It was silent.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the headphones were, like, tuned in. It was almost like a radio station. You could change the channels. So everyone who had pink headphones, it was like one song, and everyone who had green, like green lights...
Oh, right, okay.
Song. It was such a good experience. And then... whether this is, like, podcast allowed or not, I ended up getting back to my own campsite at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday. So it was a long night. Yeah.
So, oh, my goodness. I'm tired just even thinking about that now, because then you got to go to the track and get to your favourite spot and then waltz around there for up and down. Because I guess you took some footage and right stuff, didn't you?
Pardon?
You got some footage. I've seen on, like, an Instagram. You got some pictures of the bikes and things like that. And...
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If that was 7:30 in the morning, you would have been tired and just winging it all day.
Yeah, pretty much.
I was tired. I like that strategy.
Yeah, a little bit of a headache, but, you know, bit of Monster, bit of Red Bull. And
I was going to say that.
I think it was, like, the adrenaline of being around the bikes. It just, like, you know, it keeps
you going. Yeah, it wakes you up.
Yeah, exactly.
And the craziest thing about Silverstone is in the Woodlands area, no matter where you are, even coming up to it, you can hear the bikes from everywhere.
Yeah.
Even the Moto3 bikes. And I think a lot of people forget how loud the Moto3 machines are.
Mm-hmm.
I think even on the TNT broadcast, Hodgson and Gavin Emmett said, bring earplugs. It's like sacrilege to many people, that. But sometimes I can understand it, because if you've got a headache because you've been partying all night since 7:30, it's likely you will need earplugs at some point. Mm-hmm. So I do get it. But going up on the run up to it and hearing the bikes is just a feeling inside that just makes you feel warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you feel like 7:30 when you had to wake up from the tent looking rough, let's say?
Yeah, looking a bit rough. I was just there like, oh, where's the bikes? Give me the bikes. I was like, yeah, I just need it. Like, let me just hear those engines and I'll wake up a bit. It's like my caffeine, but no, like you say about how loud the bikes are, I've always found the Moto 2 like is the hardest one to listen to, because there was one year I was sat at a village and the bike sort of like came past and round behind you. I was honestly sat in the corner just like, this is too loud, this is like, my ears were properly hurting from it. So now I do bring earplugs and things like that, and because I'd rather, you know, be able to hear what I'm doing. I need to hear what people are talking about at work in my real job to...
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So. I'm one of those idiots to listen to my music on, like, full blast, or I play games with my headphones on full blast, and then I realise, why can't I hear the smallest of sounds? Yeah. So I guess it's a punishment for yourself. But I remember a couple of years ago, I was working, collaborating with BMW Motorrad at Motorcycle Live, and it was when they introduced the F900RRs. They had that on a stage, and they revved the living hell out of those bikes. And I remember standing inside the enclosure in Birmingham, listening to this bike echo and scream. I thought it was amazing. But the amount of people covering their ears thinking, oh, that's too loud, that's far too loud. I'm thinking, brilliant. Do it again.
Yeah. Let me take it home.
So I think for the experience of being there at the fan and just listening to that bike, I think I would rather go through the punishment and let my ears pop whilst listening to the Triumph 765 engines, because they are amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
And the Moto 2 race absolutely stole the show, which I guess I'll ask you about in a moment, because next thing to ask you, Abby, is highlights from the weekend, your personal highlights, and highlights from MotoGP in general. What's your talking points?
Personal highlights, I'm going to be all like mushy and say, like, I got to catch up with a load of good friends of mine that I've not seen in ages, so it was good to like catch up with friends, especially like at a racetrack, and these are friends that I've made through racing, so it's good to catch up with people there. I think... in terms of like the actual racing, I'm going to say that was the best like most Silverstone MotoGP I've seen in person in a long, long time.
Probably agree with that.
I think having all, like, I don't know how many riders went down on the first lap, four riders went down and then all four could start again. I've not seen that in a long time. So I was just sort of, that took me by surprise, and it was almost like a nail biting on the edge of the seat, especially because I think it got dusted over way too quickly. Fabio coming back out of the pit lane to rejoin the race, like, obviously when they did the restart, he so nearly didn't make it back out. He crossed the pit lane line with like a millisecond to spare, and if he hadn't have made it back out, he wouldn't have been able to start the race. And I just think, like,
I didn't see that. I don't think the TV camera caught it, possibly, but I didn't see that.
It was insane, and then everyone just sort of like went, okay, carry on. And I was like, he nearly just didn't make it out the pit lane. Are we just going to gloss over that?
No,
but, I loved, as stupid as it sounds, Marquez headbutting the things, the barriers. That was brilliant. That was so good. And I think just like the first like lap and a half in general, that was crazy. I've never seen anything like that. So I think the main race did steal the show for me, and that's probably the main highlight.
You watched all three, did you? Moto 3, Moto 2 and MotoGP, or did you have to... Yeah, yeah, you say,
and the Superstocks as well. And just don't forget the Superstocks.
Legend. I wasn't sure if you even stayed that long. It's not too far away from you, though, is it, Silverstone?
Silverstone is about 100 miles for me.
Okay. It's massive for me. It's going to be like 3.5 hours from up here in the northwest of England. So in the past, it's been, right, leave towards the end, but... I never like the structure change because of them accommodating for F1. I mean, I'm not an F1 guy. I don't care. I'm just all bikes. So for me, I hate the pattern. My routine has been messed up from Moto 2, MotoGP and Moto 3. But you know what? It bloody worked and it was bloody great.
Yeah.
That Moto 3 race was absolutely sensational.
It was good. It was really good. To be fair, when it comes to MotoGP like names, I can't pick out many names. I don't know everyone by name just yet. I'm more into like the main MotoGP and Moto2, but even still, like with Moto3, every single race, no matter where they are, what they're doing, you will always get a group of like five that they'll just like race in groups, and that's what I think is so good about it, because it's always so close. You can be at the top of the field, the middle of the field, the back of the field, you'll always be in a group somewhere, so there's no mile between it, any of the riders, and that's what I love. That's what I think is so good about it.
It was absolutely awesome. I think from the high point to the racing, it absolutely stole the show. But the low point, I think, for everyone is obviously Fabio Quartararo's ride height device deciding not to bother continuing in the British GP.
Yep.
Did you get to see the angles from where you were of him struggling to get the bike to drop the...
When he stopped on the pit lane, it was... When I say in front of me, it was bang in front of me.
When he dropped to the floor?
When he dropped to the floor, it like started crying. That was directly in front of me. And that was just heartbreaking to watch. It was absolutely heartbreaking. Like, you just felt so bad for him.
Definitely.
And obviously, when he went off and... He sort of sat by the wall for a bit in his air, and Tomo came over and gave him a little pep talk. Saw all of that as well. And obviously, I hated the fact that instantly he was sort of sat there against the wall. And you could see from the other end of the pit lane, there was just a camera crew and photographers coming running down to try and capture on camera. And I was just thinking, like, I understand journalism, I understand media, but this guy is absolutely devastated here. Just give him a little bit of space at least. And I really like the fact that his friend like covered his face for him, and just the whole event. It was so heartbreaking. It was so upsetting.
Yeah, there's just zero privacy for these riders. The way they just jump into their faces and just put them on like this pedestal, so people can see them in every angle. Mm-hmm. But I was actually thinking, you know, he was sat there in the Hamilton straight, just holding position whilst he was obviously having a moment. I honestly expected him to get fined or penalised like he did in France again. And I thought, please don't. Just let him have the moment. Let him get him off the track. But the Silverstone marshals, the way they handled the speed of getting Alex Marquez back up, although he was very critical of their clearance in that corner in general, Marquez getting back to his feet, and then, of course, clearing up the oil spill between Frankie and the wildcard, Aleix Espargaró. It was pretty impressive. I don't know if he's caught that from where you were sitting for the Morbidelli Aleix Espargaró, because if you were near the Hamilton straight, you might have just been able to see across the veil, right? Or were you in the middle?
Yes, so for the Morbidelli and Aleix one, I didn't see it because it happened like just round the corner, but we saw like the bikes go down and you could see them trying to clear it all up. And at one point they were trying to clear it up with like blue roll or something, and I was like, great.
Was that the oil to get rid of?
They were trying to clear the oil up with blue roll. And I was just thinking,
That's British, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Get some kitchen roll, we'll sort it.
Yeah, but then even afterwards, so at the end of the day, we did a track walk. The oil spill there, or like the I don't know what to call it, like the sort of the aftermath of the oil on the track was still there. And everyone was just like taking photos with it, like pointing at it. But it did some damage. It really did some damage to the track.
Yeah, it's quite amazing how we didn't get that many crashes in that corner. I mean, the majority of the crashes just occurred around the circuit, or in Luffield for Pecco Bagnaia, for example.
Yeah.
The question I have for you, though, because obviously I was sat at home in my room here with my big telly watching MotoGP and giving it all this at the telly.
Yeah.
And getting on 2 feet to celebrate Marco Bezzecchi, because I am a Marco Bezzecchi fan. I was very pleased. But how does it compare to me watching on the telly, you watching on the telly, compared to watching it at the track? Would you think it's a better experience, or... on par or indifferent?
It's a hard one to say, if I'm honest, because obviously sitting at home and watching it on TV, you get the constant action. You constantly know what's going on. When you're watching it there, you have them come past you every minute and a half, and it's insane. Like, you are just all of a sudden, you've just got all this excitement going on around you, and then you're sort of sat back down for another minute and a half watching it on the little on the slightly smaller screen, because they always put them so far away. Like, luckily we did have like 3 screens in front of us, but they just were just a little bit too far away, so you can't see the timings, which is the annoying thing. And like, I like to see like exactly who's where. You sort of just have to tell by the colors, like, just see, oh, that color's there, that might be Alex, it might be someone else. So you're sort of guessing a little bit on who's actually in front until they come past you. So I think watching it at home on the TV, it's good because you get to see everything. But then being there at the track, you actually get the atmosphere. Like, you feel the bikes go past, you feel it in your chest when they go past. So you have that much more, a better feeling, and obviously you can see it on the screen. So I would say being at the track is better, absolutely. And also you're at a track, so nothing beats that.
Absolutely. I totally agree. But I think my next question, which I'll segue into now, is that you've been around BSB quite a lot, and you've been to a lot of events and a lot of tracks. So I guess the question is, how does that MotoGP experience at Silverstone compare to something like BSB at Donington Park, for example?
I love talking about the comparison between MotoGP and BSB. BSB is open, is so open. Like, you can get right up to the garages. You can meet the riders just walking, you know, to and from the cafe. Like, the riders are hanging out in the cafe area. MotoGP is incredibly reserved. And a lot of that is because of Dorna. A lot of that is Dorna don't want anyone in there. Like, they don't want anyone to know anything. and obviously, the teams are a lot more reserved of... This, like, well, no, nobody else is allowed to see what the bike looks like. Nobody else is allowed to see what's going on. Obviously, that's changing in 2026 anyway. But just BSB, it's a community. It is absolutely a community. MotoGP, obviously, you're going to get rivalries. You're going to get, like, you know, Rossi fans and Marquez fans, I think is the best way to put it. People will be...
Do they not get on? I'm not sure. Do they not get on, the Rossi Marquez fans?
I saw something the other day. Apparently, they don't like each other. I don't know.
No way.
Yeah. So yeah, you get like your Rossi fans and your Marquez fans. BSB. I would say everyone is a fan of everyone. Like, it doesn't matter who's riding what bike or for what team. Everyone supports everyone. And I guess when it comes to actual like machinery of it, they don't have BSB. Like, doesn't have. I remember Shaky Byrne talking about it actually. How he did a few wildcards in MotoGP. And then he got back on the superbike and he just said it was like riding something completely different. Even though he's used to the power, he's used to the machinery, just going from one bike to the other, having all of the electrics and all of the rider aids there, and then jumping onto a superbike and having nothing and just basically riding a raw motorcycle. It was insane. And I think that's what's good. That's what I love about BSB is if you watch the racing and you see the bikes close up, you see how much they're shaking all over the place and how you think they're going to lose it constantly. Whereas MotoGP, the bikes are quite stable. They don't like rattle around as much, I guess. But British Superbikes is a different breed of rider. And obviously the tracks are so narrow. Like Toprak did a lap of Cadwell, came back into the pit box and was like, how are you doing this? These tracks are so narrow. Like, you can't move anywhere. And so I think obviously comparing Silverstone to Donington, You just experience so much more. You just get to experience so much more. And everyone is just so happy to talk about anything. Like, you can be standing in line waiting to get a drink and somebody will start talking to you about, you know, how their brother's second cousin was also a rider back in the day, or how so-and-so's got this bike at home. Like, you just end up meeting the most random people at BSB. And that's just, like, that's what I love so much, is how it's such a community. And I've never been to a race and felt like left out, or felt like I wasn't, you know, supposed to be there, or just felt unwelcome at all. Every single time you walk into a BSB track or a track in the UK, I just instantly feel at home, and I love it so much. I wish every weekend was a BSB weekend.
It's actually crazy how many people are, how small BSB actually is, because every time you go somewhere, there's always someone you know. Even when I do commentary at Mallory Park, there's people there for East Midlands Racing Association who are in a lower class of BSB, or they're fans of that, and they bump into you and you're like, oh, hey, how's things? And you don't realise how close and tight-knit it is until you've been in those experiences. Obviously, something you experience quite a lot now, but it is, I totally agree. The BSB to MotoGP difference is so welcoming, so embracing.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And I think the only relations and rivalries I could probably compare that don't get on is the Tommy Bridwell Glenn Irwin battle. That's probably it, but it's not to the level of Valentino Rossi and Marquez.
Yeah.
You know, it's not every single comment section taken over by a Marquez comment or a Valentino Rossi one. So that's the only comparison I can really give in terms of rivalries and when they don't get on.
Yeah, I think just another sort of mini comparison was actually at Silverstone. So I've got a few friends who race in Superstocks, and I went to go say hi to them in the pit lane. And I was in scrutineering with them, and I was sort of like hiding behind the barrier a little bit. And my friend just went, you know, you're allowed in, like you can come from around the barrier. And I was like, am I not going to get in trouble? And he just turned around and he went, no, this is still BSB. Like, most of GP, you can't get anywhere, but this is still BSB. And he actually like, he basically threw the bike at me, if I'm honest. He we wheeled the bike back to the garage and he went, oh, can you hold this for a second? Didn't give me any warning and just like pushed the bike over to me. So I'm there holding this, you know, this super stock bike, thinking if I drop this, that's the race weekend done. And I'm just like really tensed up, trying not to drop this bike because he's not giving me any warning, and he's just chucked a 1,000cc Fireblade at me. And I was just like, okay, just stay still, don't move, don't drop the bike. And that's just like, you get nowhere near that in a MotoGP. Like MotoGP, when you never even drew a touch in the bike, let alone wheeling it back to the garage and holding it. So it's a different world. It's just a completely different world.
Even Will, Superbike is closer to BSP than it is to MotoGP. I've had the privilege of going into the BMW Motorrad garage, recording a video of Mikey Vandermark and things like that, and it blew my mind how approachable these riders are. In my eyes, I've said it from the beginning, I don't matter what competition you're in, you're an alien, because I couldn't do what you could do. I can't race that level of and turn up every single week with sheer determination to do what they do and with a potential accident that could end their life. They're unbelievable. These are absolute aliens, and yet the people they'll just walk up to you and talk to you, or if you say something nice to them, they'll respond is unbelievable. MotoGP, as you say, it's a completely different world to that. They are aliens amongst the other aliens that you cannot speak to. And then rare chance comes, I think I once had a, it's a funny story actually, I got a flag from MotoGP Authentics. And when the email came through, I thought it was a scam. And I know that Jorge Lorenzo endorsed it. So I just chanced my arm and I messaged him on Instagram and I says, Jorge, is this MotoGP Authentics a scam? I've seen you follow it. And he responded.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, it's yours. You take it. And I was like, okay. Yeah. And that was my only sort of response from a MotoGP rider. But BSB, you know, you post a picture, you talk to them, they'll message you back. They'll respond to your comments and you think, this is awesome. Yeah, and it makes you feel good inside to know that I've connected on that side, because these guys are awesome, you know.
Yeah,
they responded to my comments.
With Glenn Irwin, I've done work with him before. He supports a lot of the stuff that I do. Planning to do some work again this year with him. And he's just, like, such a nice guy. I worked with him at Motorcycle Live 2023, and you wouldn't think that he's this BSB rider who can chuck a bike around a track, like, out of, like,
so
his spare
chill.
Time.
I've seen this
so
video,
chill.
Actually.
The one where he called me a student.
I think, yeah. Did you make a mistake or he made a mistake? I can't remember. Then you both laughed, but I do recall seeing it.
It was my first sort of major interview, I'm going to say. It was the first time I'd done like an interview with a big, big name. And I was basically just bricking it. And I just kept messing things up. And that's when he just turned around and was like, is she a student? First time? And I was like, oh my God. That's absolutely violated by
that's
letter.
Not helpful, is it?
No.
That's brilliant. So, obviously, you do the BSB content, you've worked with Glenn Irwin. What inspired you to start making the content in general? Because, I mean, as a fan, it's not a natural progression for everyone to just suddenly want to start covering it. What was it that inspired you?
Female motorsport creators who do, like, similar stuff to myself. And that sounds really big-headed, but I'm just going to say it anyway. Like, I think there are some absolutely incredible female motorcycle creators, and I'm lucky enough to call some of them my friends, but in terms of actually like going up to people and doing interviews and doing like, you know, educational stuff and race recaps and actually working with teams and riders, I saw a gap in the market and I just went for it. And I've got my dad's backing. My dad's a journalist, so anytime I need questions written, I'm like, Dad, can you just, what do I say? Because I did an interview with John Reynolds and my dad wrote all the questions because I didn't know what to say to him. So my dad wrote all the questions on that side of it. So learning from my dad, learning what to say and what not to say. And then, yeah, I just saw a gap and I went for it, basically. And it's worked out pretty well. It's especially this year. So the start of this year, I took a break. All through January, I didn't post anything. And I sort of basically did a social media detox because I needed it after the end of last year. And I came back at the end of January, and since then I've just been non-stop posting, essentially almost every day, sometimes twice a day, and it's the best thing I've ever done. Like, the start of the year, I had 3,000 followers on Instagram, and now, end of May, I'm about to hit 10K, and that's just from being so consistent and just interacting with everything and just re-upping my content game in general and like the quality as well as the quantity. And I hit 40,000 followers on TikTok this year as well. And that's literally just from being consistent. So yeah, I think the inspiration I had for doing it was just because I didn't see anyone else doing it. I thought, that's a gap, I'm going to go for it. And it worked out pretty well. Like sometimes the content I do doesn't go very well, because especially on TikTok, people don't like bike content on TikTok as much as they do on Instagram. And I don't know if that's because TikTok sees it as dangerous activities and all that. But I find bike content does so much better on Instagram than it does on TikTok at the moment.
I also agree with that. As a personal content creator for my Dr. Ace channel, I don't get anything on TikTok. I just don't feel like it pushes any of my videos, or it just doesn't suit the clientele for TikTok. I mean, I'm gonna be a little bit naive here, and I would say that the audience for TikTok is a lot of a younger generation, where I think Instagram is a more of a mature. That's questionable with some of the comments I see on MojiP's website, but I think it caters more to more people on Instagram, because I can do the same video on TikTok, same video on YouTube, same video on Instagram, and we're talking 200,000, 300,000 for a short, 400 views on TikTok.
Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely useless. So I don't really understand the TikTok, but you've done a very good job of doing that on TikTok and then pushing it towards Instagram, which I think is a really smart move, because the growth you can then get on Instagram, which is clearly working, because you're on to 10k now. It's very close. I know when I messaged you earlier, it was very close to 10k, wasn't it?
I think I hit 9.1 this morning.
So it's getting closer, isn't it? It's there.
And like 10k has been my goal for so long, and I'm just like, I want to hit it before summer's my goal. So I just need to keep going.
I think you will. Plug it in the chat. What's your name on Instagram? Let's get some followers in.
Instagram is abby.jacko, abi.jacko, and then TikTok is motorsport_abby, again, abi. So yeah, go check out my channels. Go give me
there you are, guys.
Thumbs up.
If you've enjoyed listening to Abby's voice and see it, yeah, smash it all, head over there and see more content. But I do have to ask, as a content creator to another content creator, January's break, was that a case of just burnout, or did you feel you're getting closer towards burnout? Because this is a real thing, and it's pretty serious when it happens, so I'd love to know your feedback.
It was sort of a personal burnout as well. I went through some I went through some heavy stuff at the end of 2024, and I got on I sort of noticed that my channels were sort of dipping a little bit as we're in the off season. There's no racing. There's nothing to post about. I wasn't enjoying being on the bike. Just some personal stuff going on as well, and I just sort of thought I need a break. I just need to just not worry about my phone or anything like that, or how well this video is doing, or how many followers I've got today. And I just literally, I stayed active on TikTok and Instagram. Like, I interacted with other people, but in terms of my own posting, I didn't even post a story for like a good, I think at one point it was like 6 weeks, and it was the best thing I could have done. I just took a lot of time to myself. I did a road trip with my dad up to go see family in Newcastle. And then obviously, we did the Race Media Awards, and I said to myself, that's going to be my comeback. From that point on, I'm going to come back and I'm just going to smash it out. Like, no matter what happens, that no matter if a video does bad, no matter if it does well, just keep going. And that's just what I've done. And it's just worked out so well. And I think looking back to the position I was on a personal side and on a social media side and in my normal career, because I was in a different job back in December. Seeing that sort of side that I was in December and to where I am now, is like, it's two different people, if I'm being 100% honest. I'm enjoying where I am so much, like obviously going to races nearly every weekend or as many as I can, working in a bike shop now as well. So sort of seeing my own personal growth as well as growth on my channels, like it's just two different people, like I say, between where I was at the end of last year and now. So it's been a crazy 6 months, but I'm so grateful for everything always.
And you think, if you hadn't had that break, the chances are, you know, if you didn't detox the mind from the social media and the pressures, because there's a lot of self-pressure, and we're the worst for it. It's not the viewers or the people who put that pressure on you, it's yourself. It's your own pride and self-preservation to say, I want to get this good video, I want to do this. And you can't help yourself to look at the numbers. You can't help see who's responding and things like that. But it's so important to just say, I know my limit is coming up. It's time to have a couple of days off, do something you enjoy, and then get back to it. So I actually fully commend that. And I think it's proof is in the pudding, isn't it? It's worked. Almost 10K. Yeah, it's exactly. Clearly working. So So I'll let you guys know I'm having a break now, so I'll see you later.
And one of the things I've always said, even before I started like my really successful year, I've always said since I started content creation, is I'm not going to get hooked on numbers. Obviously, I want that 10K, so I'm getting a little bit hooked on it now. But in terms of like...
It's only because it's there.
Yeah, it's only because I can see it. It's only because it's around the corner. But in terms of like numbers and views and likes, I've never ever gotten hooked on it, because I know that's when I'll start to like... you know, get stressed and get frustrated about posting. And I've always sort of said, So say my video gets 100 likes. Imagine 100 people in the room with you right now, or imagine 100 people, you know, looking at your bike and thinking that bike looks sick. That's 100 people. That's insane. Like, if you were to put that into like a physical number, it doesn't add up to the same on a screen. And I think I've always sort of said as well, as long as I'm enjoying what I'm posting, that's the main thing. Like, as long as I'm happy and I like the content that I'm putting out, then that's what I'll really post for. Like, if I don't like a video, I'm not going to post it. Or if I, you know, even totally if I spend like 2 hours editing it and then I'm actually like, oh, don't like that anymore, I'm not going to post it, because then I'm not enjoying it. So I don't think my audience is going to enjoy it either. But yeah,
exactly. Like, and you're only as good as your last video in some...
Yeah.
So if you do an absolute terrible video because your heart wasn't in it, you will regret that forever.
Exactly, yeah.
And you'll never want to do it again. You'll just like, don't upload that ever.
Yeah.
So what kind of fan reactions have you had that have either been positive or negative that has motivated you in a certain way?
I had one really, really big motivator at the British Superbike Finals in October last year. I was walking back to the car, these two young kiddies in front of me, and they were like looking over their shoulder, and they were like, they're sort of like, and they started chatting to each other, and I was like, is there someone behind me? Is Tommy Bridewell there or something? And he just turned around and he's like, are you Abby Jacko? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, I told you it was her. I told you she was behind us. Oh my God, can we get a photo? And oh, I couldn't believe it. It was the first time I've ever been asked for a photo or like ever been recognised. And it was just these two little kids at BSB at Brands Hatch. And I think for me to get recognised at a BSB round, that was such, that was it. That was like my, oh, I've made it now. I'm happy. So I think there's been a few times where I've been recognised. When riders started to recognise me as well, that was a really big motivator. And then you get the odd comment, you get the odd like ridiculous comment, like in a negative way. And a lot of the time it makes me laugh. Like I'm not one to like conform to the hate comments and like fight back.
No, shouldn't.
No, like I think a lot of the time, other people will reply for me. Like somebody else will see a nice hate comment and they'll think, oh, why are they saying that? And then they'll start an argument. But at the end of the day,
oh, not
the,
nice.
The arguments in the comments are boosting the video because it's more clicks back to the video.
True, so, yeah, true. So
that's why I'm like, sorry, I've got a notification that's bothering me on my screen there.
Yeah, no worries.
So yeah, if people are arguing in the comments, I'm not going to get involved, but I'm going to let it happen because it boosts the video, which is a sort of a toxic way to do it. But no,
they started it,
exactly. And I've had a couple like misogynistic comments, or like there was one in particular which I did put onto my main story because I was like, that's just ridiculous. And it was something like, oh, men don't want women who ride bikes. And I was like, sorry.
Oh yeah, I think we spoke about this. Like, yeah,
and I think I was just sort of saying something like, oh, it's fine. I was so looking forward to our first date anyway, or something like that. And it was just, it was ridiculous.
You've got it, aren't you?
Yeah.
Proper kicking it. Yourself.
Exactly. Am I ever going to survive?
Oh, bless you. Get, yeah. Oh.
you get some ridiculous ones like that, but they are just funny. Like in the long run, they're funny. I don't think I've ever had anything like particularly bad comments or messages. I do get some like strange messages sometimes, but I've never had anything that like stands out as that was a bad comment. I just get a lot of good ones and a lot of funny ones. And if anything does come from it, a lot of other people will just fight the battle for me, and I can just watch it happen.
That's nice. I like that side of it, that people back you up, because that's when you know you've got a good community around you.
Exactly.
Especially willing to do so, because being on YouTube, you get them as well. You know, there's people who cannot wait to tear you down to their level, whether that's for their engagement or not, I don't know. It's up to them. But I think for a female, it's difficult. You know, for women there is a misogynistic view, as you say, where people just think, oh, it's a woman. Why would I want this? Don't know why they think that. It's up to them. But do you think that has an impact on the female side of content creation for bikes? Do you think it empowers them, or do you think it takes it away from them when they make these stupid comments?
I think it definitely will put a few people off posting videos, and it definitely will put a few sort of, I think a lot of like the younger audience or the younger girls who are looking into starting their bike journey, I think it will put a lot of like younger people off. But I think I've been doing content creation for like 4 or 5 years now. I've developed a pretty thick skin.
You have to, yeah.
Yeah, I think some people it will empower them because you know, they're fighting. They're I don't know. I can't remember what the word is for it. They're fighting the social norm essentially. Like that's not what is normal, and people don't like the fact that it's not normal. And so it is empowering, and it's good to see that there is other women out there who have the same passions as you and who have the same hobby as you. And at the end of the day, I think women riding motorcycles is fucking badass, is badass. Like, it's so good. It's so cool to see. Like, motorcycle gear just looks awesome. The helmets look cool. Like,
so good.
Being able to control a machine that does X amount of power, it's just, I love it. I think it looks so good. I know there's some creators out there who I just fangirl over so much, and like, it's great. And then, like, sometimes they'll reply to my comments or they'll message me, and I'm like, oh my God, oh my gosh, she messaged me back. Oh my goodness. There's a few people who have followed me back, and I've just like fangirled almost instantly, but you know, it's good fun.
That's awesome. I mean, I especially like the women's scene of that because the more the better. Get everyone involved with it. It's great. But I really like the women's championship racing in you know, the World Superbike. What's the name of it? Is it World Championship Race? Women's World Championship Racing, the WCR?
Something like Women's World Road Racing Championship. It had a weird name, but I just called it Women's MotoGP. Just Women's MotoGP was the easiest way to call it. Yeah,
Women's Superbike, isn't it? I mean, but the racing, that's fantastic. Like, last year's finale between Herrera and Carrasco was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely amazing, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm one of those people who likes MotoE as well, so I'm probably more open to things when it comes to bikes, but I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Some of the some great racing and tactical to try and win championships and things like that, so I think the shift is definitely changing and it's becoming more equal.
Yeah.
But I say bring more ladies to MotoGP. Yeah. Bring more ladies to bikes. Bring everyone. Yeah. Bring the friends. Exactly. Bring everyone to MotoGP. Makes our lives easier.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I do think in MotoGP, I don't think they're doing enough to actively fight like any misogyny or anything like that, because obviously Formula One, they're starting to get good at it with F1 Academy. Obviously W Series was a flop, but F1 Academy is actually starting to break grounds, and all these teams are coming out with they're coming out with these programs for that'll support women through karting and through the early days of racing and potentially up to Formula One. That there's none of that in MotoGP, I don't think, at least. Like, there's no teams or there's no manufacturers that are backing like women's racing or getting more women into bikes, and I think that's what I'd like to see more of. And I think once we do start to see that, it will just have a bigger impact, and it will actually, you know, we won't see as many negative comments. But I think I just want MotoGP to just do a little bit more, just a bit more into it would be good.
I think we're closing in. We're closing in because we've got proper teams assigning real-life talent. You know, Anna Carrasco's now part of a proper team as well, and Maria Herrera, Beatrice Neal. There's a lot of riders now who are actually getting factory-supported teams, and we're getting there. It's baby steps, isn't it? And we've got some fantastic people in the industry. You know, Fran Wild is excellent. Susie Perry's been there forever, and we just keep getting these more great personalities in the paddock. I think eventually it'll happen. So maybe we just need Abby Jackson to make it to MotoGP.
Exactly, yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's the secret.
Doing something that Susie Perry does or Grace Webb, for me, that's the end goal. That's what I want to do. That's what I'd love to do. Or I've always sort of said the main dream would be to do the presenting in BSB with Shaky. Doing like the TNT
stuff.
Nice,
yeah.
Like alongside Shaky Byrne. That's the ultimate dream. I just think that would be so good. So much fun.
Far the same for me. I've always wanted to be you know, a commentator for the World Championship. I've done commentary, as I say, for club racing and esports and things like that, but I'd love to do proper commentary for World Championship season, or even national for like some BSB. That would be absolutely bloody wonderful, but we'll get back to my dreams another day. It's not about me, it's about you. So, speaking of you, I think it's time we shake things up a little bit and have some quick fire questions, if you're ready.
Oh God, yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah, you ready? So, without hesitation...
Is this like a quiz? Is it like a quiz, like testing my knowledge? Or...
No, just questions, just basically from you. Just straight from you. Your opinions, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
So, first and foremost, favourite MotoGP track to watch?
Either
at the track or just on the TV.
Silverstone? I love Sepang.
Okay, cool. Dream paddock past, who would you hang out with?
Marc Marquez.
Yeah, you do like markers, I just remembered. Yeah. dry race or wet race, which do you prefer to watch?
I like the wet racing. I do enjoy the wet racing.
Okay, cool. Johann Zarco for the win.
Yeah.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I'll ask anyway because I've written it. Pick one rider to win the title this year. And why do you think it's Marquez?
It's gonna be Marquez. I mean, if you look at the stats, it's been like 1-1-1 DNF, 1-1-1-3 or something like that. So it's just insane. He's going.
Yeah, but what about Alex Marquez? Wait, I've got his t-shirt on. Alex Marquez.
Yeah, it's gonna be Alex in P2. It's gonna be the Marquez brothers P1 and 2. I think
that would be unbelievable.
Gonna go down as like, you know, the history that the brothers made. It's insane like what they're doing this year. And like you can tell Marquez is enjoying racing again. I think the last few years he had at Honda, he hated racing. He did not enjoy it. But now he's with Ducati, he's actually enjoying being on the bike. And I think that's what's going to drive him to win, and that's why he's winning. So, it's going to be more.
So there's nothing in that chest of yours that says, or in that heart that says, there might be a little upset somewhere. Someone comes up to the fray. No. Dead adamant Marquez.
Yeah.
Probably right, but still, I thought I'd try.
Exactly.
One rider you'd love to see make a comeback to MotoGP. And now, I wanted to put this in a question as in, like, either a rider who can actually come back, or just a rider from the past who's now in his prime again. It's entirely up to you how you want to answer that.
I would... So many. There are so many, oh my goodness.
You can give a few if you want.
I think it'd be cool to see Pedrosa back. That would be good.
Full time, yeah?
Yeah, Danny.
I think he still could do a good season as well. Yeah.
I think Casey Stoner. I do like Casey Stoner.
Yeah,
if he was
that's
come
a
back.
Good one.
But if we were to bring like a prime back, it would be Doohan, Mick Doohan.
Nice, okay. Yeah. Mick Doohan in the modern era, wow.
Yeah.
I like the sound of that. That sounds really good. So, first MotoGP memory you can remember?
I think this one, I get them mixed up. Because it was either MotoGP or World Supers. I think it was MotoGP. I was at the track with my dad, and my dad was doing some interviews. And for the life of me, I can't remember which rider it was, and that's what I hate the most, is I can't remember who it was. But my dad was about to do the interview, and some kids came up and were like, oh, can we have your knee sliders? We want your knee sliders. And this rider was just like, you can have them if you can get them off. So my dad was doing this interview while he had two kids around his knees trying to pull his knee sliders off.
Did they get them off?
I can't remember. Maybe they might have done, but I was very young, but I do remember that, just having, like, watching my dad interview this rider while he's got two kids hanging off his knees. So that was a good one.
I'll be Cliffhanger Jackson. Mm-hmm. I was looking forward to finding out if he got them. Now I'll never know. I want another rider, and I won't know who's that. Which team would you ride for if you were given a wild card?
If you had asked me a few years ago, I would have said Repsol Honda. Okay. And now I'm going to go with Ducati, because I think across the board... BSB World Supers and MotoGP Ducati are just winning.
The kings.
Yeah, exactly.
But would you do something smaller since you already raced the 125? Well, you ride the 125, sorry.
This is going to be me a little bit of a tangent, really big-headed here. Like, I've ridden a 500 and I loved it. And I think in the years to come, I do think I have the potential to be a very good rider. And I do eventually, at some point, I'm not saying in the next few years, I will definitely get a track bike and I'll do track days.
Awesome.
So I think I'd like to experience like a junior superstock or like super sport race. And just, I think that would be really interesting to be a part of, again, because the racing is so close and everything's so close together.
Yeah.
And the bikes are so raw. I think a super sport race would be a good one to get involved with, as well as MotoGP.
I guess that one's a believable one, you know. I mean, not saying it's not believable you might make it to MotoGP, but it's a lot more difficult. So I do get that. But maybe in the future we can see that. Maybe I'll be commentating that race, who knows. Could be a perfect world. Most underrated rider on the grid in MotoGP?
I think after this weekend, Bezzecchi, can't say his name. After this race, Bez. Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You avoided saying Bezzecchi there.
Yeah.
Bez. Marco will do.
Yeah. Bez.
I like Bez. I'm a big fan, but I might be biased, so I'll not answer that question. But one unpopular MotoGP opinion.
Oof.
What do you reckon will set people off with the pitchforks?
I don't know, because I'm like to be relatively level-headed. I think Biaggi was overhated. I think people flocked to Rossi a little bit too much. when it came to Max, when it came to the real Rossi versus Biaggi.
And I was a bit of a...
I'm like, it's a case of
people made that decision because of Rossi.
Pardon?
Because people made that decision over more so to join Rossi's forces rather than to actually dislike Biaggi because of the rivalry.
Yeah.
So similar to Seti Gibonau as well, and Lorenzo, and pretty much everyone else Rossi's had a rivalry with, now I think about it.
I think, obviously, I was very, very, very young when it was Rossi Biaggi, but I think, like, looking back on it and watching all the races back, people flocked to Rossi because he's Rossi, and they just hated Biaggi because he wasn't Rossi. You know,
probably true. There's probably some truth to that.
That's why I think I actually like Biaggi. So,
okay, fair enough. That is an unpopular opinion.
So I'm going to change one of my answers from earlier. If we could get anyone back on the grid, it'd be Biaggi as well.
Everything changes. Oh my god. Now here's a question which would probably be my unpopular opinion, but this is why I've written it. So, I'm not overly a big fan of the sprint races. So, sprint races, love them or lose them. What do you reckon?
I thought I was going to hate them, but I actually really like them. Yeah. I think having the, obviously being in person, like being at Silverstone and being at the tracks in person, it does add that added bit of excitement across the 2 days, because it can get a little bit boring having no action, or a little bit of action on Friday, a little bit of action on Saturday, and then everything happened on the Sunday. So I think having that actual excitement of the race on the Sunday is really good. In Formula One, I know this isn't not to do with Formula One. I hate sprint racing in Formula One. I hate the sprint race in Formula One. I think it's ridiculous. I think they need to get rid of it. But in MotoGP, I think it works. Like I thought I was going to really dislike it, but I enjoy it. I really like the sprint racing.
That's fair. I will give a little bit of backstory why I don't particularly like the sprint races. As a fan and someone who worked a job that I didn't like for many, many years, MotoGP's build-up was bliss to me. The Friday, the press conferences, the racing, the practices, the qualifying, and that huge build-up on Sunday morning. I'm off work, I'm chilling, I'm going to sit here and I'm not going to move an inch because I'm going to watch MotoGP all day. Yeah. That, for me, was the pinnacle of Sundays. It was incredible. I think it's diluted the racing ever so slightly with having a sprint race, because you kind of see version 1.1 of the weekend and then you see version 2 on Sunday. Yeah. And I think sometimes it does take away the glitz and the glamour of the Sunday racing. That's why I think it does. Yeah. But I do agree, we've had some cracking sprint races, so... Mm-hmm. It's kind of, it's difficult to say, just completely get rid of them. So, but I wouldn't want to do them every now and again, because then I think they become pointless. So that's the reason why I wanted to bring that up. But here's an interesting one for you, because with you being an artist in your own way with your content creation and designers for things like thumbnails and stuff like that, helmet design. Who would you say has the best helmet design in MotoGP?
I do like Fabio's helmet, and I always
El Diablo's the devil.
Yeah,
in that.
I think the El Diablo. Oh my god, I can't get the words out today. It's been a long day. El Diablo helmet. I think that's one that like somebody will buy a replica one, and you'll spot it from a mile away on the street, and you'll instantly know that's Fabio's helmet. So I think,
would you buy a replica of it?
No,
you wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't buy one for myself because I got a black bike. I think you need to have. I think you need to have like the
fair.
The bike and the suit to go with it. Even though I do have a custom helmet already. I think Fabio's got the best, because obviously when he got his head down, you can just see everything.
Yeah, it does look good.
Obviously, you can never beat the Rossi helmets. Like, Rossi just had the best helmets, full stop. But I do think at the moment, it's Fabio.
That's fair. I like that too. I think, I do agree. I think Rossi's helmets are, it transpires from just being a helmet for someone to race to an active piece of clothing wear for people to buy and replicate over the years. But a personal favourite of mine was always Lorenzo's and Ben Spee's. I always loved those. I thought they were amazing.
I think Leitch does good ones as well.
Yeah, I quite liked the other one from a few years ago with the little 41s and then the Max and Mia on it as well. Yeah. It's really cool. It's a nice touch.
Yeah.
It's cute, isn't it? And I guess final quickfire question. If you could swap lives with one rider for a weekend, who would it be?
I tell you what, I'd probably be Jack Miller, to be fair.
Okay, cool.
Jack Miller, because... he's always out like doing dirt bike racing or doing out on his dirt bike, but he's just like, you'll open up his story and he's just doing the most random thing. So I think Jack Miller for a day would be pretty fun.
Jack Miller's one of those guys who just has fun, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
I think I like that idea. For a future, Abby, thinking of in the future, What circuits would you like to visit next? Are you thinking more something Europe, or would you go really far out for something in the future for MotoGP or even World Superbike?
I would love to do Assen. I think that's just one of the tracks that, like, even like a BSB are going back there for the first time in years this year. I think Assen is one that I'd want to do no matter what was there, no matter what racing was there. I've always enjoyed Sepang. That's one that I just desperately want to go see. And probably something like Phillip Island, something really far away.
Yeah, that would be really
Phillip
cool.
Phillip Island, but far away but exciting. So it's one that's going to be worth it. So I think those ones, probably those ones.
That's awesome. Mm. I think, wait, you will be going to Assen then because of BSB. No.
No. No, so I do as much BSB as I can, but there's a few rounds that are just like, I can't do it in a weekend. Because at the moment, right. I've been driving up after work on the Friday and then driving home on the Sunday night. So Assen and like Cadwell and Knockhill are ones that I just have too far to do, but all the other ones are pretty much doable in a weekend.
Right, yeah, I understand. I was thinking, though, of Knockhill. Actually, I was going to ask you about that because, yeah, that is far, especially for you, because you're in the southern part of England, right?
I'm on the south coast. Literally, the end of my road is the cliff, so I'm pretty much as far south as you can get.
Yeah, so Knockhill is not advisable for you, but at least you're close to Brands Hatch, in a way.
Yeah, Brands Hatch, and which is the best track in the UK, so.
Oh, that's subjective, but, I mean, that's a talking point.
It's the best track, full stop.
I've been to Brands Hatch and I almost agree with you. I think it's absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. Really amazing track. I mean, you had the pleasure to be there for the final last three years. I guess that's why you say so.
Yeah.
What's next for your content then, Abby? What's next for you? Have you got anything particularly planned or just more so we're covering stuff as we go?
So for this season, I have been doing stuff with a Superstock team, Noble Racing, along with Braden Elliott. We did some stuff at Alton Park, which has gone down really well. The content started to come out from that. So we're going to be carrying on working with him this season. So that'll be, what's next, Snetterton in June, which I'm really looking forward to because I've not been to Snetterton before. So nice. I'm really excited for that one. And Snetterton is a fast track as well. And it's actually the other day I fully committed to everything and I've already got my accommodation booked for Snetterton, Brands Hatch, both rounds of Brands, and Thruxton as well. So like there's no backing out now, I'm there. So just be making as much content as I can across the racing this season. I've already had like a few riders from different categories reach out and be like, oh, you know, I'm really enjoying what you're doing. Like, would you be able to collab with me as well? And I've already said yes to quite a few things. So yeah, just sort of, in a way, just enjoying it and just winging it because I genuinely love the racing and BSB so much. Like, I don't just go for the content. Like, even though I'm working at some of these rounds, I don't just go because I'm working there. I go because I genuinely have that passion for the racing. So yeah, just enjoying it and just doing what I can with the content. And if I get some good videos, I'll post them. If not, then I had a good weekend. So yeah.
That's fantastic. That sounds really good, especially when you put yourself in an environment that you enjoy. I know they do say that, you know, the work will never become... if you work in a job that you like, it'll never become a job as such. I don't know. My quotation has gone here, but you get the point.
Find a job you love, never work a day in your life.
That's the one. See, at least one of us is competent. But yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, you're putting yourself in that situation, you're getting out there, you're meeting the riders. It's just brilliant, isn't it? And I like that style. Don't put the pressure on yourself. Just go out there, have fun. And you probably get there and you find something that instantly goes, I'm going to make content on that.
Yeah.
That'll work.
Exactly, perfect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really like that. And I guess final thing to say then, Abby, is any message to the fans tuning in on Knee Down? Anything that you'd like to mention maybe for the future for yourself, something to keep an eye out for, or even a message to say, come along and join the ride? What? Anything you'd like to say?
Go and check out more BSB, if I'm being dead honest.
Yeah.
MotoGP's great fun, love it. But BSB, especially if you're in the UK and you're near a track, BSB tickets are cheap. Like you're not going to find racing anything like it. So if you love bikes and you're in the UK and you're near a track, just see if they've got a round of BSB on because it is racing unlike no other. You'll get up close to the bikes. There's racing all day, like from dusk till dawn, from dawn till dusk, sorry, the other way around. There is non-stop racing, so you'll never get bored. There's always something to do and everyone is so friendly. But if you can't make it to a track, but you still want to be in the know-how of BSB, go check out my channels, because I'll be at as many rounds as I can this year. So abby.jacko or Motorsport Abby, it's where it's all happening this year. Yeah, so just keep your eye out on what I'm doing, basically, because I've got some cool stuff lined up. It's the easiest thing to say, really.
Clever little segue, I like that. Let me write that down. That was marvellous. I tell you what, you could do these outros a bit more often. Well, Abby, I tell you what, it's been a pleasure.
It's been good. Thank you for having me.
Well, honestly, definitely have you on again. Hopefully, if you're interested in coming back, of course.
Yeah, no, definitely, absolutely. I mean, I will sit and talk about bikes for hours. I do it all day at work anyway, but coming home and talking about the racing more, love it.
Sign me up. Yep. So that's it. We found a perfect guest from now on.
Yeah.
Well, Abby, thank you very much. It's been absolutely awesome chatting to you. I hope you enjoyed the questions and hope you had some fun here today.
Yeah.
Definitely try and get you back on in the future. I think the final message you gave was fantastic and the clever segue. Yeah. So I guess that's it then. So, guys, thanks for watching the Knee Down podcast. If you're watching, if you're listening, thank you for listening on wherever you may be. And I guess I'll see you next time. So ciao for now.